One in four people suffer from some sort of mental illness. So if it was one, two, three, four, it's you, sir. You. Yeah, with the weird teeth. And you next to him. You know who you are. Actually, that whole row isn't right. That's not good. Hi, yeah, real bad. Don't even look at me. I am one of the one in four. Thank you. I think I inherited from my mother, who I used to crawl around the house on all fours. She had two sponges in her hand, and then she had two tied to her knees. And she would crawl around behind me going, "Who brings footprints into a building?" So that was kind of a clue that things weren't right.
Comedian and actress Ruby Wax delivering her TED Talk. She's well known for her TV and theatre work, but she's also very vocal, as you heard, about depression and how to deal with it. Now she's followed up her best-selling book, Sane New World, A User's Guide to the Normal Crazy Mind, with A Mindfulness Guide for the Frazzled. Ruby Wax, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Ruby, you're famous for being a really high-energy, quick-witted TV personality. Writing a book on mindfulness seems like a bit of an about-face. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, I was interested in mindfulness about 8 years ago, and the only reason I was interested in it was because I wanted to find a way that, you know, when your mind is keeping you up all night and there's that endless loop tape of, I shouldn't, I couldn't, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, everybody hates me. I realize everybody has those. Probably you right now are thinking, I don't know what I'm going to say next. And I'm thinking the same thing. Well, I was so interested in all of that, and obviously because I have depression, but that's, you know, that's not my only reason, that I decided to do, to really find out how, what's the most successful as far as dealing with staying up all night or, you know, that kind of ruminating mind. And it was mindfulness and cognitive therapy. Otherwise, I would have gone on a weekend workshop for how to heal your inner elf. You know, there are, the only time I used alternatives or self-help was when I was writing Absolutely Fabulous. I mean, to me, it's a source of comedy. So this really had scientific evidence, and I thought, well, I'm going to go to the horse's mouth. So I hunted down one of the founders of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which is both of them. He was a professor at Oxford. So I said, I really want to know what goes on in the mind. What happens in the brain, don't give me the fluffy stuff. He said, if you want to find out, you'd have to get into Oxford. And because, you know, I like a challenge, I wasn't even bright when I was a young kid, but I got in, and then I studied it for 2 years, got my master's. And I used my dissertation as my show. So
wow.
I killed two birds with one stone.
I bet no one's ever done, no graduate from the University of Oxford has ever toured their dissertation before.
No, I had to bump it up with comedy. You know, I did a little what Bill Bryson does. You take something interesting and then zap it up. And so to me, mindfulness, it isn't for everybody, but it's certainly a way of, you know, changing. Stress is going to be around, but what happens next is kind of up to you. So you don't get stressed about stress. And it gives you a different relationship with those thoughts. You still have them. I still feel those kind of, you know, bad reviews coming in. But you can keep a distance from them, so you're not in the kind of direct firing line.
If mindfulness isn't for everyone, how do you know whether you should persist with it or not?
Well, it's like going to the gym. You know, it's the same thing, you know, and you're not going to get a six-pack with one sit-up. So and it's agonizing in the beginning when you go to a gym, but later on you go, wow, take a look at this waistline. It's the same thing. It's not pleasant. You know, you have to practice something. You know, you didn't come into the world knowing how to play tennis. If it's too agonizing, you know, because it is a discipline, but you do only have to do it a few minutes a day, you can't pull the ripcord when you're in an emergency situation. But if you practice when the stress really does kick in, you've got, let's say, a buffer part of your brain that can really pull you away from those agonizing thoughts or that kind of cycle of despair or whatever you want to call those constant thoughts or the obsession to be busy. It's something you have to practice. It's not fun, but there is a payoff in the end. If it's really too much, if you really don't like going to the gym, don't go to the gym. Not everybody wants to do a six-pack, you know, get a six-pack, so walk away.
You're very open about your experiences of depression. Before you achieved your master's degree in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, was there a lot of trial and error trying to find a way of managing your depression? Did you have some odd moments where you were like, oh, things are not right, I've got to sort this out?
Well, the thing about depression, again, the mindfulness book isn't about depression, but you're talking about my personal relationship with it. You're the last person to know when your brain goes down. You haven't got a spare brain to make an assessment like you would. You'd know you have a broken leg. But if your brain is sick, you can't stand back. So I finally had to ask a friend of mine, do I look crazy to you? And she said, yes. So with the mindfulness, it isn't a magic pill. You know, I didn't have it for 7 years, but then last year I did get it, which I mentioned in the book, that I could, because it's about getting aware of how you think, not erasing the way you think, but just standing back. I started to notice the depression kicking in earlier, and then you can do something about it rather than it just taking you hostage one night. And the next thing you know is your old personality's gone and been replaced by a block of cement. So I did see it coming. Then there are a few things I can do. I still got depression.
And you advocate mindfulness, but you're not a zealot about it. You also acknowledge the need for medication for some people for depression because it's a physical illness.
I mean, if medication worked, we wouldn't have relapse. But I sort of treat it as, you know, using two condoms. When you're not in the heat of depression, then you have to do something to keep your mind flexible and be able to, you know, have that self-awareness to see when your thoughts start getting too out of hand.
Is there something about modern life and the way we live our lives today that makes mindfulness particularly important?
Well, the reason it's sort of come into being is because in the past we had community, or you'd have a church, or you'd have, you know, a close-knit family, whatever. That would sort of be the calming mechanism, you know, so that people could, you know, pull the brakes. Because we don't have that, and it's too expensive to find a shrink, and good luck getting a bed in a hospital if it gets that far, we're going to have to do some kind of DIY. And mindfulness and cognitive are pretty much the first off the bat. There will be other things, but there's no question. They say by 2020 it's going to be stress that wipes us out, and that's simply by the way we think. You know, there are threats, but it's not like a predator behind you that you can deal with and then, you know, your system comes down. Now we always feel under threat. Mm. You know, there's always a newspaper headline that's jacking you up. You know, even if the threat is 20,000 miles away, what can you do about it? Mm. And there's always articles saying you're not good enough, you're not thin enough, you're not achieving enough. And you may say, well, you don't care. But we're all working in a community where we're related to each other. We all have the same virus. We do care. We are affected by the news.
And science shows that constant sense of threat produces a real physical reaction in the body, doesn't it?
Well, you know, your cortisol's bumped up. It's not your imagination. And that is the mother of all diseases. So even if you don't like the word mindfulness or being present doesn't mean much to you, if your brain is too overactivated, that breaks down your immune system. And once that happens, you're kind of, flypaper to every disease that there's going. Your immune system goes down, then heart disease kicks in, obesity, infertility, premature aging. That's way before you get to depression. So, I mean, it is something for your health.
Have you been contacted by any converts who've read your book on mindfulness or received any feedback from people?
Well, the book only came out on Monday. But
some people are fast readers.
Yeah, some people are fast. Well, people who say, I didn't really understand mindfulness, it was too complicated, it's not for me, they get this one. This is a real practical guide, and it's a guide that you can use while you're waiting for a car, taxi, or you're sitting in the back of a bus, or you're on a train. It's things you can do just for a couple minutes. But because I talk a lot about, and I hope in an amusing way, what happens in the brain, you understand that's kind of the equivalent of doing a sit-up. Each time you're making a certain part of your brain much stronger that works opposite the kind of alarmed mind. The only way you can pull that alarm down is by, you know, practicing focusing on a sense. That pulls immediately the gabbling mind down.
Just finally, Ruby Wax, are you facing a big 2016? What's coming up for you this year?
Oh, I'm doing my show in the West End, the last one. This book's coming out. And then my mission this year is I'm opening walk-in centers. So, again, it's not for, you know, the depressed, though you're certainly welcome in there, but a place where people can talk, because I think that's half the cure. So it's sort of like AA, except it's for people who feel they might be burning out or they feel that anxiety.
Free chat sessions with Ruby Wax. Who would say no?
Who would say no? I hope so. Anyway, I hope it spreads to Australia. I hope you read my book.
We'll certainly have a go.
And I hope I get back to Australia. That's the most important thing.
Oh, we'd love to have a Ruby Wax drop-in here in Sydney. Thank you very much for your time,
Ruby
Wax.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time.